Welcome to That's Wild Podcast, the podcast that explores the amazing natural world that surrounds us and astounds us. I'm your MC, Dustin Bean, and our hosts, Susan Altrui and Joy Matlock, will share insights and mind-blowing facts that will leave you saying, "That's wild." It's all about inspiring you, the listener, to value and conserve our natural world. That's Wild is brought to you by the Arkansas Zoological Foundation and produced by the Little Rock Zoo. So with that, let's get wild.
Welcome to That's Wild. I'm your host, Susan Altrui, and with me, as always, is my wonderful, smashing, darling host, Joy Matlock.
I got new adjectives today. Thank you very much. It's good to see you.
I love adding some fun adjectives for you, Joy. Welcome.
Good to be here. So today we're talking about sloth bears.
Ooh.
And hopefully we won't drag our feet.
Oh, but Let's talk about sloths. Let's talk about sloths. Or hopefully we won't hang around in a tree all day. Although, honestly, that does sound amazing and doesn't sound so bad to hang around in a tree all day. Kind of like what we saw with sloths on planet Earth. But important distinction.
Yes.
Sloth bears are not sloths.
That is correct.
Yeah. It's a very distinct species. So want to clear that up because a lot of people think when you say sloth bears.
That you're talking about the sloth.
Right. Mm-hmm. But it's not the same thing. And we're going to learn a lot about that today because why, Joy?
Well, because we're going to have a special guest who is an expert in bears, particularly, but we also are blessed at the Little Rock Zoo because we have sloth bears as well.
That's right.
We get to talk about that
today. We do. We've got a lot of sloth bears. We are chock full of sloth bears right now. Isn't that a word to use? Oh, well, you know, sloth bears aren't slow when it comes to survival, and neither are we.
Right.
Yes.
So I mentioned the guest already. We're going to have Dr. Laura Bernstein-Curtis come.
Yes.
And she'll help us understand a little bit more about sloth bears and AZA safe programs and all things that zoos can do together to help take care of sloth bears.
I like that.
Excited.
That's exciting. So Joy, we've got a brand new segment we're introducing today.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be doing current events and what is new in the news.
Wonderful.
New news. That doesn't make sense. But we're going to do what's new and some current events that are happening around. So let's talk about that.
Sounds good.
Shall I start?
You go up first, yeah.
Well, okay. All right, here we go. So do you hear my paper rattling? It's because I have something very exciting to talk about.
It's hot off the presses.
And I just want to say, because this is something very near and dear to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
It involves a very special animal.
What's that?
The red wolf.
And why is the red wolf so special to
you? Well, it's because I'm a red wolf.
Oh.
So I went to Arkansas State University, which is the Red Wolves, shout out, Wolves Up. And because I am a red wolf, I'm very interested in red wolf conservation. And there was some exciting news that came out just last month in August. And it turns out that we have some new pups that have been born in the wild. Mm. And this is signaling a very hopeful new future for the red wolf conservation efforts that are in North Carolina.
Okay.
So, little background here. There is an effort underway with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services to reintroduce the red wolf back into the wild. Mm-hmm. So their population has been declining significantly. But here's what the good news is. Let's start with that first. Mm-hmm. So U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services shared the good news that the world's only wild population of red wolves has grown by as many as 16 pups.
Wow.
That's significant. Mm-hmm. That's a critical step forward for a population that numbered as few as 7 known wolves in the wild just 5 years ago.
That's amazing.
In fact, with 18 known adult red wolves, the population has increased by more than 150% since that low in 2020.
Wow.
So that's pretty significant.
It is.
So we're really excited to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Like many wolves, red wolves typically bond with a mate for life. They are highly social creatures living in close-knit family packs that typically consist of the breeding pair along with the offspring from a previous year and any of the pups in that litter.
Mm-hmm.
So the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service tracks these pups that are in North Carolina along with the breeding pairs mm-hmm. that live together. What's interesting about red wolves, though, they once used to roam the southeastern part of the United States, including right here in Arkansas. And a lot of people don't realize that we used to have red wolves here in
Arkansas.
I didn't
know that.
Yep,
Mm-mm.
They were part of our range. Red wolves were driven to the edge of extinction in the 1970s on up to the 80s, largely due to hunting and habitat destruction. So that's a pretty interesting thing. So it is because of what we've done to them mm-hmm. that their numbers have been mm-hmm. decimated so much. Mm-hmm. So we started this reintroduction effort. In 1987, so the late 80s, we started this reintroduction effort in North Carolina in a designated effort. And it was really the first time that a large carnivore was used in a reintroduction effort.
Okay.
So first time that was ever done. And it's been met with mixed success. There were as many as 100 individuals at one time. Mm-hmm. There was some success there, but there's been some issues with coyote hybridization mm-hmm. And them having some cross-pollination there. But they've been able to reduce that as an issue. And so now we're seeing more success with red wolves actually populating. We're seeing a decrease in some of what we call that animal-human conflict mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. Red wolves were getting hit by cars, mm-hmm. unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And some other things. So the numbers are starting to look better. So they were getting really low there. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was really concerned that the program was just going to be a complete failure mm-hmm. at one time, was my understanding. But I think now it's looking really good for the red wolves.
That's
looking
amazing.
Better.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I don't want to say looking really good because it's still pretty critical, mm-hmm. but it's looking better. Mm-hmm. So I think that's good news. Good news for the red wolves.
It is good news.
Yeah.
And I did not know that red wolves had once been, you know, a native species in Arkansas.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. And maybe one day we'll see them back over here too as well.
Yeah.
And not just as a college mascot, but actually
right.
here. Yeah.
And I do want to give a shout out to Arkansas State University because they've been doing some efforts mm-hmm. there to really educate their students about the fact that it's not just a mascot. I think a lot of people think that the red wolf is a fictional character.
I was one of them.
Right. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that. But mm-hmm. it is an actual living animal and has a lot of history to our state. So shout out to them for that. And shout out just to the red wolves. Wolves up, you know? So we'll see what happens with the red wolves in North Carolina and keep supporting that program.
That's wonderful. So the article that I found that's conservation-based was in this past month's Smithsonian Magazine. Back in August, there's an article there that was about the elusive sailback hound shark being rediscovered.
Did you say hound shark?
A hound shark. Being
a hound dog.
Yes, but
it's
not,
a shark.
But a shark.
Okay.
Yes. Rediscovered in Papua New Guinea after 50 years.
Okay.
So you have to start the story back in the past.
Okay.
In July of 1970, a fisherman caught a very unfamiliar shark off the coast of Papua New Guinea in the Australo Bay. And it was a mysterious pregnant female that had never been seen before, had a very strange, unusual dorsal fin down her back, very wide eyes, a large head, and, you know, she was pregnant at the time, and they later recognized that this was a new genus of shark, and they called it the sailback hound shark.
It's a mouthful of a shark name.
It is a mouthful. So fast forward 50 years later. So I should say after that discovery back in the 1970s, it hadn't been seen again. It was not seen again.
Hmm.
So fast forward to March 2020, more than 15 years later, and that creature has turned up again. In a paper that was published just this past month in the Journal of Fish Biology, scientists shared that the first verified records of the long-lost species since it was first described happened again in March of 2020. And that was a female sailback that they found, and about five of them, actually.
Yeah,
so,
so
I guess to recap, back in July of 1970, they found this mysterious shark.
Yeah.
Had never been seen before. Then never saw it again.
Wow.
And then 50 years later, in March of 2020, they discover it again as another set of five females.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And then again, in March of 2022, they found a male. So again, 50 years later, we're finding these sharks
again.
It's
very rare sightings.
Very rare. Yeah. Very rare. So what's interesting about this article is that I learned a new word. Since it's only ever been found in one place, scientists suspect the sailback hound shark might be micro-endemic.
Okay.
which means it's a
microendemic. That's the word today. Yeah.
Which is a species with a range that's restricted to a very small area.
Okay.
So that means you can't find it everywhere. It's only in a small part of the earth that you will find this particular species or other species that have that that adjective associated. And what makes that interesting is that they're vulnerable because there's not that many and they're only found in one small part of the world. So even small changes to their environment can have an impact on the population of that animal. The threats that the sailback hound shark has to it is fishing and overfishing because in those waters there are lots of delicacies of fish that people like, especially the Chinese in that area, a particular fish that they like. And so that the fishes that they're fishing for can be caught up along with the sailback, you know, and that's a threat to them. And so that can be a problem. They get caught up in those fishing nets as well. But the good thing is that the scientists are working with the artisanal fisheries, the people that are going for those specialized fish, and just the common fishers.
Awesome.
So that they can protect that species and make sure that they don't overfish them.
Yeah.
So it's quite interesting. You know, you got two aspects of the story. A species that they thought had gone away, to never be seen again. It was rediscovered.
And then this year we've seen some more individuals of, according to this article, which is interesting.
Right. Yeah. And then working together with the fishermen so that we can protect the species now that we've
It reminds me of when we've had Hannah here from the zoo talking about the Seafood Watch app.
Correct, yes.
And what you can do by downloading that app and making sustainable seafood choices.
Correct.
Something that we can all do, which is another thing I think that this speaks to.
For sure.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
So I like this new segment of Wild News. I like being able to kind of go out into the to the internet and find out news.
Sharks and red wolves.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's a whole thing we're talking about.
It's
you know, one
good.
Of the things I wanted to point out about the red wolves is, and that conservation story, is the impact that zoos are having.
Mm.
Is part of this conservation story is that zoos have been critical in accredited zoos in particular. In breeding red wolves that are part of that release program. And so we're just seeing more and more the impact that accredited zoos are having in these conservation stories. And more and over again, we see that impact.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. It's not just about displaying the animal.
That's absolutely right.
Making sure we have an impact.
That partnership with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is so important where red wolves are concerned.
I love that. That's good.
Yeah, great news segments.
So we are so happy to have you here, Dr. Laura. Welcome. You work at the Little Rock Zoo. You are the conservation and research coordinator. Mm-hmm. And you also have a very important role with AZA Safe with bears. And we are glad to have you here to talk about sloth bears and various other things about your background.
I want to also point out, she has actually traveled to Indonesia to work with sloth bears. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is an impressive resume that you've got here. It's an impressive business card. I mean, do you carry around like an index card when you meet people and say, like, here's my business card? I mean, it's impressive. So,
I might as
welcome.
Well. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Very good. Welcome.
Well, as we kind of alluded to in your introduction, you wear a lot of hats at the zoo: conservation, research, sustainability. That's the one I left out earlier. When someone asks you exactly what you do at the zoo, how do you answer that question? What's your elevator speech of what you do at the zoo?
So I usually try to say that I have a few different jobs that cover a range of things regarding to conservation, which is how we protect animals and nature in the wild, and also sustainability, which is a lot about how we do conservation right here at home. Recycling, water usage,
I like that.
Energy usage, that kind of thing. And then research, too, that I facilitate research on grounds at the zoo. And in the summers, I even am able to do a little bit of research on grounds when I've got interns as well. And we look at animal behavior and welfare research on grounds for that.
Well, personally, I've observed you do all the things you just said. And I'm just like, how does she have time? Because you do have the interns and that takes time. Mm-hmm. You do the sustainability and conservation around the zoo with helping us recycle. Mm-hmm. So you obviously are a good time manager. I'll say that, seems like.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I do my best. It's a lot of balancing one thing or the other, right? So if I have three jobs and a third of me can do each, sometimes conservation, I do a little more. In the summer, it's a little heavier on the research. When we have a recycling event coming up, it's a little heavier on that. So it's a lot of sort of juggling, you might say, Joy?
Oh, not juggling.
Perhaps. I might
Joy
be able to relate.
A little something about juggling.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So when we talk about sloth bears in particular, I want to zero in on, let's first talk about what is a sloth bear. Talk to us about what a sloth bear is.
Yes. Okay. So a sloth bear is one of the species of bears. And I was about to say how many species of bears are there, but do you know how many bear species there are in the world?
Okay,
Joy knows. Do you know?
Is it eight?
Yes.
Ah,
very nice.
It's
eight. Okay. So sloth bears are one of the eight species of bear on the planet. Sloth bears are native to India, Sri Lanka, and Nepal. So a fairly small area of the world. And sloth bears have a very particular diet. Do you know what that is?
Termites is one of them.
Yes. Insect, right. They're insectivores.
Insects. Insectivores.
Exactly.
Yes.
They're insectivores. So that's unusual. They're the
only
species of bear.
If you eat insects, are you considered a carnivore?
Well, I love that you asked that.
Yeah.
So carnivore actually kind of means two things.
Okay. Mm.
So you can be a carnivore and you can be carnivorous.
Interesting.
Right? So a carnivore is an animal that is taxonomically a carnivore.
Uh-huh.
So falls into the carnivore family.
Yep.
Right? All bears are carnivores, like dogs, like cats, like any of those carnivores. They aren't necessarily all meat eaters.
Huh.
So sloth bears are absolutely carnivores because they are taxonomically carnivores. But I don't know if you'd call insect eating, that's called myrmecophagous. I don't know if you'd actually call that carnivorous.
Myrmecophagous.
Mind blown.
Yes.
Okay.
So maybe.
Wait, say that word again.
Seriously.
Myrmecophagous.
Myrmecophagous.
Yes.
Okay.
They probably would eat a little meat, but they don't generally. It's a large amount of their diet, especially at the time of year when they can get, when termites are plentiful.
Sure.
They eat termites and ants. They'll also, they're bears, right? So they eat a lot of different things.
Okay.
They'll eat fruits, they'll eat plants, they eat other things too. But
a
big portion of their diet is ants and termites.
Okay. Okay.
That's why they have those long claws that look like sloth claws, but they're actually for digging open termite mounds.
Interesting.
So fun fact, they're called sloth bears, not because they have anything to do with sloths, but because one of the original specimens back when explorers were going out and studying, European explorers were going out and studying animals, right? A sloth bear specimen ended up with near a shipment of specimens from South America. So they were incorrectly assumed to be South American and to be related to sloths.
Interesting.
Based on that and those long claws. So we now know they have nothing to do with
sloths.
They're not slow. They don't hang in trees. They're not particularly good climbers. Though when they're younger, they can climb. But that's what those claws are for digging open termite mounds.
Okay.
Then they suck all the termites out.
Love it.
Interesting.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah, they're a beautiful bear. They've got that long hair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Big. They're big and shaggy.
Uh-huh.
They've got lots of big shaggy fur. It helps keep them cool in the hot areas where they live.
Yeah.
And then keep them warm in the cooler times of the year and the cooler, wet seasons of the year.
Uh-huh.
They've got some adaptations specifically for eating bugs.
Okay.
So bears will lose their baby teeth, just like other mammals.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
But when their adult teeth come in, they don't get their front two incisors.
Huh.
So they don't get those front two incisors. There's a little hole there that makes it easier for them to suck ants and termites.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Unlike an anteater that doesn't have teeth, that just has that long, almost tube-like mouth.
Uh-huh.
They don't have that because they're bears, but they, those front teeth being gone helps them
to suck in all those termites.
I never knew that. That's interesting.
Did not know that.
That's interesting.
You know, the sloth bear is one of Joy's favorite animals I've come
to
learn.
It is. It is. I love sloth bears. One of the very first animals that was born at the zoo when I came in 2019 was a sloth bear. And so it was just so easy to fall in love. And I will say, when I started off at the zoo, my favorite bear was the polar bear. We had polar bears when I was younger at the Little Rock Zoo. And now, and when I got to the zoo, we had grizzlies and we had the sloths and we had a sun bear too. But those sloth bears, they were just so easy to love, especially since we had a baby. So, yeah, that's one of my favorites.
They're so cute.
They are so cute.
Yeah, it's a good choice.
Yeah. So at the Little Rock Zoo, well, first let's talk about that. The Safe Sloth Bear, the Safe Partner Program, is made up of 12 partner zoos. And three international field partners in India and Sri Lanka. And what made the Little Rock Zoo, our zoo, a good candidate to be a part of this program?
Yeah, so the SAFE programs, let me take a little step back and just talk about the SAFE programs.
Yeah, yeah.
So
please.
The AZA SAFE program, SAFE stands for Saving Animals from Extinction. And the goal of the SAFE programs is to bring zoos together, to collaborate together, and leverage our impact to improve conservation in the wild. So for, you know, 40 years, 50 years, zoos have been contributing to conservation, but in a less organized way, or through the SSP programs. There have been some amount of collaboration.
That's the Species Survival Plan,
The Species Survival Plan. So previous to the SAFE programs, that was often where some of these conservation initiatives lived.
Yep.
But it wasn't organized in the same way. The SAFE program started 10 years ago, and the goal is to pull us all together to direct our money and impact in a directed sort of way.
I see.
specifically by working with field partners in range countries for these animals or species or ecosystems, and supporting initiatives that are already in place in those areas.
I see.
So we aren't saying, we as AZA or SAFE aren't saying, hey, India, you should do this for sloth bears. We are saying, hey, India, field partners in India, what do you need support doing for sloth bears that you already have identified but can't get done without help?
Right.
That's great.
So that's the goal. And I think Safe Sloth Bear has been pretty successful in that. So sloth bears were a great species to put together a SAFE for. We have a great SSP, so Species Survival Plan for sloth bears. Little Rock Zoo specifically, carnivore curator, Debbie Thompson, has been the SSP coordinator for sloth bears for a long time. We have a lot of expertise in sloth bears amongst our carnivore team. And so she worked with a few other people at other zoos to kind of get this off the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
The SAFE programs, much like the SSPs, depend a lot on people in zoos or employees in zoos volunteering some time to do this.
Yeah. Oh,
so some of what made us a good candidate was willingness to be a part of it and do the work.
Yep, I love that, the willingness,
So that was right around when I started at the zoo. The SAFE program was kind of getting off the ground, and so my interest in bears and my history studying bears made me a natural fit.
Sure.
I started working with Debbie. I started working with the team.
Now, is it your PhD work that's in bears? Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Awesome.
So my PhD was in bear behavior and welfare.
Yep. Great.
And sloth bears were one of the species in that.
Nice.
So it fit in really nicely with what I already kind of came in,
the
expertise I came in with already. And then I'd also say our program leader has done a really good job in keeping us aligned with the goals of SAFE in general and making sure that we chose goals and objectives for the SAFE that aligned with what field partners needed and the conservation plans that existed needed.
I think that's so important to look at conservation through the lens of what the partners need and not what we think they need. And too many times we have been very arrogant in the conservation field and thought we know what's best, and the communities where these animals are have been left out. And so to me, this is a really important discussion that we're having and continue to have of how do we create a best practice around what helps communities. So I love hearing this.
That's absolutely true. And it's part of what, I think it's part of how the field partners themselves were chosen, that they also have that focus. So our field partners also have focuses on the local communities. A lot of the work they do, some is with bears themselves, and then a lot of it is with the people who have to live near bears.
What's one of the field partners that SAFE works with?
So the SAFE works with Wildlife SOS, which originally started in India in 1995 to rescue bears from the dancing bear trade, which is now an illegal in India and is largely eradicated, but was a group of people, the Kalandar people who lived in India, were a tribe there. They would go into the woods and take a sloth bear cub and essentially like this practice, they would put a metal bar through their nose and it would make the bear stand up and look like it was dancing if they pulled it. It wasn't really dancing. It's painful for the bear. It's obviously not a practice that, you know, should have continued, and it so that practice is now illegal, but those people had been making money doing that and their livelihood doing that for hundreds of years. So to go into a group of people, say, you can't do this anymore, and then leave isn't going to work.
What do they do for
money? So Wildlife SOS helped train people in that, the adults in those communities, to do other things for money and ensure that the children got an education. And so by doing that, then the Kalandar people were able to abandon that practice, find other ways to make money that didn't injure wildlife. And that trade has been eradicated. Now, that resulted in hundreds of bears needing a home. So sloth bear, Wildlife SOS set up sloth bear sanctuaries, and many of those bears are still alive. Bears live a long time. So they're aging out now, but many of them are still alive. So they run rescue sanctuaries. They also, at this point, 30 years on, do a lot of work with other species as well. But we work specifically with them on their sloth bear efforts.
That's great.
They do research as well.
That's wonderful. Really good.
One of the other key conservation issues with sloth bears is that sloth bears are aggressive, so human wildlife conflict is a real problem. So do either one of you know the top predator, really the only predator for sloth bears in the wild?
Uh, tiger, maybe?
Like I should know
tiger.
This.
Okay. Okay. I was thinking, what's bigger than a sloth bear
right.
and more aggressive?
Tigers.
It
so
has to be a tiger.
Tigers
yeah.
will attack sloth bears.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
But sloth bears will fight back.
Oh.
So if a
okay.
tiger approaches a sloth bear, sloth bears will stand up, and like you said, they're shaggy.
Uh-huh.
So they stand up and get really big, put their arms up, and they will scare tigers away.
Wow.
They will protect their babies. The female will uh-huh. have the babies clinging to her back. She will stand up and scare the tiger.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's incredible.
Wow.
What that means is, if you surprise a sloth bear, it's not going to run away.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
It's going to stand up.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
So that's what makes them so dangerous,
okay.
is that as there's habitat loss and humans are encroaching on sloth bear
so
habitat.
So they've got that kind of inherent behavior in them to
exactly.
be protective and aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Got
so
it.
If a quiet person mm-hmm. collecting firewood accidentally surprises a sloth
aha,
bear,
not good.
There's a real risk that they
yes.
will get
ugh.
Mauled by that
yes.
sloth bear.
Not good.
I see.
Which leads to sometimes retaliation killings of sloth bears.
Ooh, okay.
It's just bad all
it's
around.
Bad. Yep.
It's
yeah.
really bad all around. Mm-hmm. So another one of the initiatives that's a part of the Sloth Bear Safe is being run by our partner in Gujarat, India, Wildlife Conservation Biology and Research Foundation, or WCB
yep.
for short.
Yep.
And they do a lot of work with local communities, and they are developing what they're calling bear deterrent sticks. So it's a long metal stick with bells on it that makes noise.
Mm-hmm.
The
uh-huh.
idea being, if you are going out in the woods, take this stick and
you.
Shake it. It will make noise. The sloth bear will know you're there and will leave.
Ah.
They don't want to attack you.
I mean,
they
that's
just
such
surprised.
A simple solution.
That is very simple.
That's
I mean,
the idea.
Sometimes conservation is a simple solution.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So they're studying, they've distributed a couple hundred of those now, and they're studying the effects to see if it's working,
yeah.
if it's bringing down those... conflicts and also how people feel about them. They're surveying people as well to see
okay.
are people using them? Do they
yep.
feel safer,
yep.
et cetera.
Interesting. This reminds me a lot of like the Cheetah Conservation Fund and other cheetah organizations have used Anatolian Shepherd dogs mm-hmm. To monitor mm-hmm. farmlands mm-hmm. to reduce the number of cheetah conflicts with
yep.
farmers because farmers were killing cheetahs because they were taking their cattle and taking
right.
other wildlife taking other domestic animals. And so it cut down on the number of cheetahs that were being killed. And so this is a very similar type of strategy,
yep.
it sounds like.
Yeah,
so,
keep the people and the animals separate in the first place.
That's mm-hmm. right. That's mm-hmm. right. Yeah. Interesting. Very
yep.
interesting.
So we've talked about a lot of mm-hmm. field work and mm-hmm. what you know and what you know the partners have done in the field work. And you, too, have been to the field. You went just last fall. What would you say was a memorable moment from that time that you were there? If you can choose just one.
I got to see a sloth bear in the wild.
Oh.
That was very cool. So when we
wow.
were with Wildlife SOS, we had zookeepers with us from various zoos that worked with the keepers at those sanctuaries.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not my realm of expertise. I was really lucky to get to witness some of that.
Mm-hmm.
But then we left there and we spent some time at one of their field stations
mm-hmm.
Out in sloth bear country. And we went hiking and we got to see
oh,
a couple
wow.
of wild sloth bears. Only for a minute because it started raining and sloth bears, not a fan of getting wet.
Got it.
Far away we saw, we think it was a mom and cub.
Oh, wow.
Come out forage for a few minutes before
yeah,
heading back inside
yeah.
as it was raining.
Oh, wow.
Into a cave. So that was really cool. And we got to go to Sri Lanka as well. So our third field partner is in Sri Lanka. They're new to sloth bears. This is the Sri Lanka Wildlife Conservation Society.
Okay.
They've studied elephants and human wildlife conflict in elephants, I think, for 30 years at
mm-hmm.
this point. But we brought all three safe partners together so that the Sri Lanka scientists can learn from the Indian scientists.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Who've been studying sloth bears for much longer. So that was mm-hmm. another really nice part
that
of the trip
was, nice.
Was pulling all these people into the same place
mm-hmm.
and really facilitating that field work. It really mm-hmm. felt like we were doing the purpose of why we were there.
Gotcha.
That's
gotcha.
Great.
I saw your face kind of soften when you talked about seeing the
yeah.
bear in the wild. What would you say is your favorite behavior that a sloth bear exhibits?
The way that they forage is that sucking and that blowing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when they're looking for something, they blow
mm-hmm.
out air. And if you're ever near a sloth bear, which you won't be in the wild,
no,
but if you're lucky enough to go behind the scenes
mm-hmm.
At a zoo, you'll hear them doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very cool to see. It's just very different than any other bears
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to see them sucking things up. Also, I don't know if this is something they do in the wild, it's more of a zoo behavior, but there are certain foods like a coconut. If you give a sloth bear a coconut in a zoo, it will stand up high and throw it down to
break
it.
Oh,
wow.
Oh.
That's cool.
Very fun to see.
Yes.
You know, a grizzly bear or a polar bear is so strong, it just stands on things
right,
to break
right.
it, but a sloth bear doesn't think to
nope.
do that because
nope.
that's not how they forage.
Right, right. Interesting.
That's huh. kind of
they
the other question
things.
I was going to ask you. What is a unique behavior of a sloth bear as compared to other bears? So we just already said one about being able to smash the coconut from
yeah.
the head.
That or the digging open of termite mounds
mm-hmm.
and the sucking is really something other bears don't do. That's why they have such long faces compared
mm-hmm.
to other bears
mm-hmm.
is that adaptation for sucking up ants and termites that is absolutely unique to the sloth bear.
Wow. Was there a moment when you were in Sri Lanka that you can remember that was just, that particularly stood out or something? You briefly mentioned one just a second ago, but is there anything else that just really stood out that was something that just took your breath away or something you wanted to talk about?
Yes, and it doesn't involve a bear.
Okay.
We were staying in the field house in Sri Lanka, and it was hot and humid, which I thought I knew humidity living in Arkansas. I did not. I was not prepared for the Sri Lanka humidity.
Yeah.
I survived. But I was outside one of the mornings just standing in the grass looking out, and Dr. Nishith from WCB called me over and pointed down in the grass, and there was this giant snail. I don't know.
Wow.
6 inches long.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. It was incredible. Just working its way along the grass, living its little life.
Wow.
And there was something about that, this just massive snail, an animal I didn't expect to see, didn't think about before I got there.
Sure. Yeah.
Just doing its thing that, for whatever reason, really stuck with me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's still an animal moment, but it was an unexpected animal encounter with a true wild
Isn't that
animal.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
A really special moment on that trip.
That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that our staff is going to the place where conservation is happening and making a difference in the field. What are some of the other things that we're doing in the field when we're going to work with some of these organizations?
So this particular trip, like I said, the zookeepers get to work with the keepers at the sanctuaries, and we got to meet some of these other people. Another piece of this trip I didn't mention was that our vet, Dr. Sarah Stoneberg, and a vet, Dr. Sarah Kay from National Zoo, came along, and they, our contact in Sri Lanka, organized a mini symposium of wildlife veterinarians in Sri Lanka for them to come and talk to. And our vets did lectures on wildlife forensics, wildlife care, various sort of in-the-field veterinary skills to teach those veterinarians things that they didn't know yet.
That's
so that was a really different sort of focus. We were able to share some knowledge in that way. The veterinarian system is set up differently in Sri Lanka. The vets work for the government, not for private organizations. So that was one thing that we were able to do that's just different, I think, than other projects. We've sent staff to other places. A few years ago, Hannah Baker, who I know has been here before.
For sure.
She went to SANCOB, which is an organization in South Africa that rescues African penguins and other African seabirds. And she was able to go for, you know, a few days and do education training and learn how they care for their penguins there and get to know their organization a little better to bring that back so that we'd understand it and also share some of her knowledge as well.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Another question for you, Dr. Laura.
Yeah.
What would you say to listeners who are listening to us right now who wonder if zoos are really about saving animals or just exhibiting them or putting them on display?
I love that question because my answer is we do both. And you can't do one without the other.
Wow.
So to exhibit animals and not be doing anything to save them in the wild would be to ignore our ethical obligation to be doing something to protect the wild cousins of the animals we have at the zoo. But also the animals we have at the zoo act as ambassadors for their species, right? They bring people in, they help people connect to these animals in the wild and inspire them to care about conserving these animals in the wild. We wouldn't take sloth bears out of the wild now,
right?
The animals we have at the zoo are the legacy of people before us who went out in the wild and took animals from their homes. So we have an obligation to do the best we can to care for them and help them help people learn to care about animals in the wild.
And how do you think our work connects back to visitors at the zoo? You talked about it a little bit already.
Yeah, well, I hope that we're able to demonstrate that we are really making a difference for the animals in the wild by supporting the people who are doing that work in the field and not trying to just say, hey, we know best for you.
Right.
But by saying, hey, let us help. Let us support what's already going on.
Yeah.
And by coming to the zoo and supporting the zoo, you are directly supporting that work.
Absolutely. I think that's a wonderful point. Yeah.
So for our listeners, if they're listening and you know, following along with our conversation, what can they do, even if they're not scientists? They're just, you know, moms driving their kids back home or dads that are, you know, living their lives or teenagers. And it seems like a massive problem. It seems like a problem that's far away.
Right.
What can I do living in Kansas City.
Well, I would say, as a mom who also drives my kid home sometimes in Little Rock, I understand. If you try to do everything, you can't do it. It's all too much. So you pick something that matters to you and you focus on that. So if bears are important to you, you can support our zoo and supporting our work there. You can support any of these partners directly. You can also do things close to home. Energy efficiency in your house and recycling and taking care of our world and all the different ways we take care of it here has a ripple effect everywhere.
Absolutely.
So something as little as unplugging your devices when you're not using them, turning off lights you don't need, not running water when you don't need it, up to contributing to some of these organizations in the wild, or supporting the zoo in doing this work, or supporting the zoo's donation drives to help them. Anything along those lines makes a difference.
Very good.
That's
very
great.
Good. Very good.
Well, Dr. Laura, we have really appreciated having you here today, and this has been so educational for me personally. I have learned a lot, and Joy, I'm sure you have too.
I have. It's been great.
Well, thank you so much. I can talk about bears all day.
Yeah.
So,
I feel like we all can now.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. So, Susan, wow, we heard a lot today. Dr. Laura is so good.
I adore her.
I do too.
Great information. Just wonderful talk about sloth bears and SAFE and the conservation efforts there. Fantastic.
So, what is the one or two things that you learned?
Well, I learned a big word. It's called myrmecophagous. Did I say that right?
I think so.
It means animals that eat bugs. That's what I learned
that
today.
I like that. It sounds fancier to just say bug eater.
I love that. I mean, we can say myrmecophagous. I'm going to say that all day now.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I learned two things, or I should say one thing that's reiterated. Yeah. The first thing is don't scare a sloth bear.
Facts.
Just don't walk up on it.
Yeah, facts.
Make noise.
Yep.
That's pretty handy to keep in the back pocket.
Carry your stick with the bells
on it. Don't scare them. But the other thing, though, in all seriousness, is that was reiterated, that I would say that I've appreciated in other roles that I've had, is to respect, and back in my other role, we called it ethno-knowledge, what the people of the area already know, whether that's an oral history or their knowledge from experience or what's been passed down. And you said at first about not trying to walk in and be the expert. Those people who live in those areas know because they've lived there.
Yeah.
So let's find a way to walk in tandem and be partners, true partners in whatever the task is at hand. So I love that that was reiterated in the work that we do with AZA and AZA Safe. So that was my takeaway.
True partnerships. Just like we're a partnership,
We are a partnership.
Love that. And love that you all could join us today on That's Wild. If you'd like to learn more, come visit us at the Little Rock Zoo. Meet the bears, ask questions of the keepers, and be part of the work to save species. Every visit and every listen helps conserve our wild spaces and places. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. Thanks for listening. And as always,
stay wild.